Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I am Michael Stein. My guest today is Marjorie Morrison. Marjorie is the founder and CEO of PsychHub, the premier online platform for mental health. Marjorie co-founded PsychHub with Patrick J. Kennedy. Kennedy, that's pretty cool. Prior to PsychHub, Marjorie was the founder and CEO of PsychArmor, a similar service focusing on mental health for the military and their families. Prior to PsychArmor, she worked with over 500 Marine drill instructors, interviewing them and working with them. I'm super lucky to say that I grew up with Marjorie. She grew up in my neighborhood. She went to my grade school, my high school. She's smart. She's funny. Here is Marjorie Morrison. All right. I'm here with Marjorie Morrison. She is an old friend from the neighborhood in Encino. We went to the same elementary school, same high school. And she has specialized in the world of psychology, and she's worked with 500. I love the part which says she worked with 500 sergeants in the Marine Corps, drill sergeants. This crusty old son of a bitch behind me with the cigarette, he's my stepdad. He was a Marine Corps. He was a sergeant in the Marine Corps. He was my stepdad since I was 10 years old. It totally changed my life. So that's very interesting. So I'm so excited to talk to you about your life, how you got into this, your work with the military, what you're doing now. I wanted to start with, like, when did you first get interested in psychology?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And it's such a pleasure to see you again. You look a little bit different than you did in elementary school and high school. But thanks to Facebook, I feel like, you know, we get a quasi stay connected. So I really appreciate it. And I think this is awesome that you're telling these kinds of stories. So thank you. I don't know exactly when I wanted to get into mental health, but I would say that I was always the person that people would come to with their problems. My dad was a psychiatrist, so I sort of like landed in that. And then when I went to college and everybody joined like a sorority and a fraternity, my kind of sorority was the hotline. I always get embarrassed to admit it, but that was my life, like where I spent my Friday nights and my Saturday night was like on the hotline and just helping random people that would call on the hotline number. And so I think that's when it kind of really sparked for me when I was graduating college and everybody was applying to grad school. It was just assumed that I was going to go get my graduate degree in psychology. And I just wanted to challenge myself in a different way. It just almost seemed too easy. So I applied to a doctorate program in organizational psychology because I thought, how cool could that be to work with companies? And so I got into this program, this four-year program. And the one thing I didn't count on was how terrible I always was in math. And there were so much statistics and I hated it. So I did that for a couple of years and I petitioned out of it.
What course was that had a lot of math?
All this organizational psychology is way more about statistics and variance. And it's so much about like, you know, this data piece of psychology that kind of just the way that businesses look at things. And it's more like consulting, like around data. And I hated it.
I remember taking a course in philosophy and it was math. And I was like, what the heck? I wanted to like sit and theorize with like, you know, get spiritual, but it was all math.
Yeah, so I was like, this is not good. So I did it for 2 years. I got out of that, did petition to get a master's, but then I went back and got a master's in counseling psychology a few years later. And that was the beginning of my sort of career in mental health.
And when did you branch off and doing your own business? I mean, what did you do before leading up to, you know, your big, was PsychArmor your first big business?
I've had like just a very interesting career because I never planned any of it. And I never, and now that I'm an entrepreneur, never ever thought about being an entrepreneur either. I'm literally one of those that just has had a lot of dumb luck that one thing's led to another. But when I got my graduate degree, I did my training at Children's Hospital in San Diego. So I did that. Then I went into private practice and I spent about a decade in private practice. It was a great gig when you have young kids because you can kind of plan things, you know, if the kid has a field trip or, you know, something at school, you could not book a patient between 10 and 12. And so I did that for a number of years. And then in the late, about 2009, I think, I took my first opportunity, or maybe it was even a little earlier, to work with the military. So I think in 2008, that summer, I did like a fun stint in Germany and worked on a base. I just thought, how cool is that? I mean, you had your stepdad. I didn't know anything about the military. I always say growing up Jewish in Encino, like we didn't know anyone in the military.
Yeah, well, that's for me. My stepdad was a Jewish guy from the Bronx. And he was a sergeant in the Marine Corps. But what made you want to go out to work with the military, though, out of the blue? I mean,
it's such a good question. And it's such a dumb answer, really. I just thought it was cool. I just thought, like, wow, these people are risking their lives. I was so fascinated by it. I knew nothing. When I got my first job, you know, working at MCRD, which is the Marine Corps Recruit Depot, which is everybody west of the Mississippi that goes into boot camp in the Marine Corps goes to MCRD in San Diego. And I will tell you that I flew out of that airport, I don't even know how many countless of times, for a decade, and never knew that, you know, the Marine Corps boot camp was literally right next door. I knew nothing. I was so clueless. And I got in and I just was so enamored with the culture. I just thought it was so fascinating that just the simple things that it had a barber shop and a bowling alley, and just like, it was like this microcosm of the whole world. And that, you know, Marines weren't just people with guns and rifles. They were doctors, and they were, well, I guess not really doctors because that's out of the Navy, but they had medical centers and they had schools and they had, you know, every job in the civilian world. They have those, what they call them, MOSs in the military world. So I just became like obsessed with the culture. And the time I came in was at a time where PTSD and the terminology around it was just getting started. So people weren't really familiar with it, but kind of military mental health was just kind of getting started. And as I got in and I was positioned in the counseling office, the interesting thing, it kind of was like this in you know, civilian world, but it's changed. It was almost seen as punitive to go into counseling, because a lot of times it would mean that maybe there was an allegation of domestic violence. And so you had to go in and go see someone to kind of check in the box to get back on duty. And so I was just so struck by how not willing people were to come in and get help. And so I would just sit there like for hours and nobody would come in. And so that was the impetus of writing proactive mandatory counseling, because they just knew there was all these people that had a need and there's all these people that wanted to help, but they weren't getting connected. So it was just really random.
So you've interviewed 500 Marines. What were like some of the commonalities that they had personality-wise that you saw different in them?
That's such a hard question, because there were themes and everyone's kind of different. I think a big part of it probably was relationships and, you know, partners not understanding what life is like. And so I think that's so much of why there's that community when you're on active duty, that you bond so closely with your brothers or your sisters, because when you're not part of that, it's hard to understand. I think that was one of that bond piece was pretty profound, but then it kind of wreaks havoc in personal lives and in relationships, because it's hard to share what's going on. And I was really lucky. They brought me in kind of under the hood. So I really got to learn a lot. A lot of the same kind of concerns we would have, issues with kids, concerns that, you know, their kids had problems. And then this greater fear around needing to be, you know, perfect or doing everything right, especially at drill instructors, they're really kind of like a fishbowl. Everybody's looking at them. They're like lots of protocol. So I think a lot of issues around not wanting their superiors to hear anything, that anything was going on, that sense of having to be perfect. I did that actually for a while. And then I went to Camp Pendleton and further built out the program with infantry men, which is different than drill instructors. So they had kind of different issues, but it's been a while now too, Michael. I've been out of the active duty space for about a decade now. So I'm really going back in time.
Sure, sure. I just find it fascinating. Once, because back to my stepdad, and when I talk to other people, that their parents are the Marines particularly, he didn't talk. He didn't like to talk so much unless he told the damn joke and then he told it for too long, or he would curse. It was really bad to show any signs of weakness. Like he did was like, if his arm was bleeding from a burning radiator, you know, you ask him what's wrong, and his sentence would be like, ah, you know, that was it. You know, that was a conversation. Was that, I mean, Marines, you know, don't want to show weakness. So that's, therapy might be difficult. And then also, how do you get them to talk?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that was the impetus of developing this program, because everybody went through it. Literally everybody from the commander all the way down. And so there was nobody, nobody got like an absence of having to talk to me. It was like everybody knew that everyone had to talk to me. And we rotated it out where I did individual every 3 months and then group every 3 months. So every 6 weeks, they were all in front of me. So that helps because they know everyone's doing it, and it removed any of the stigma of like going to talk to someone. And some of them would talk for a really long time and others would say very little. And I always just try to meet people where they're at, you know, and I try to be like, I tried to do more of, you know, what can I help with? What, like, do you need resources? Like what, you know, do you need help? Sometimes it was, you know, I think my kid might have ADHD and I'm not exactly sure what to do. That's what the teacher said. So it's like, okay, let me get you into the early childhood program, whatever, you know, just some of it was just kind of matching resources. But what I used to tell myself, I don't know if it's true, because some of these things you can never really prove or anything, is that what I hope to be able to do was demystify what it's like to talk to a therapist, and that it can be just be very normal. So that if a later point in time in life, you did need to go see someone, that you could see it isn't some weird thing where you have to lie on a couch and they're going to see right through me, and you know, that it could just be like a normal person that's there to help.
Right, right. So what time was this around when this is before you started Psych Armor, right? So you're getting all you're getting your reps in, you're getting, you're learning about all this. Is this when you segued into starting that company after this?
Yeah. So what happened at MCRD was probably one of the biggest, most difficult professional things I'd ever gone through in my life, because I was part of a contract. I was like a contracted employee, if you will, to work on the space. But who had the contract, I had no relationship with them at all. Like they didn't know me. And basically every Friday you kind of punch in your hours and that was that. And here I was like building this program and had all this buy-in. And they just didn't know. They didn't care. There was no real person that, like, I had no supervision. It was just kind of like, you're just a number. And so there was this big disconnect between me and like who was paying my bill for me to be there, which was not directly the military. And as I started moving in and really got in tight with the general and the colonel, they were running the program, the group, the counseling center where I originally started, they didn't like me very much because they were like, she's gone rogue. And she's like, these people are supposed to come in our building. It's what's called family advocacy, come into family advocacy to get treated. But she's out there talking to anybody. And the rule of my contract was it was anonymous confidential counseling, which was brand new at the time. So And within the confounds of the scope of it, I could meet people wherever they wanted to meet. The whole point of why this was a massive, and now it's over $1 billion. It was just awarded actually last week to a new company, but at that time it was probably hundreds of millions of dollars. And so the whole impetus, which makes sense, right, is let's not make these, our soldiers, airmen, Marines, it was for everybody, have to go into a counseling center. They could go meet with an anonymous confidential licensed counselor somewhere. And so that was what I was under, but they didn't like that. I was the first one that they had had. I kept extending my contract. The Marines loved me. And so they called the company, and the next day I was fired, and no one, like, I never knew anybody. I was working my ass off. When I tell you, I was there 7 days a week. I was working like these long days to get everybody through the rotation. And of course the leadership is like, don't worry about it. Like, we'll take care of you. And, you know, in the end they couldn't, because it was like this contract, you know, so it started.
Like, who's above a general though? That you're dealing with a general? I mean, who's above them?
Yeah, these crazy, see, now I know a thing or two. At the time I didn't. I would have the same, but these contracts are like based off of, you know, even if it's a complaint, at that point in time, the Marine Corps was the last to really buy into this. It's called Military Family Life Counselor, this MFLAC program. And so it was the whole Marine Corps was at jeopardy within this greater company that had the contract. So it wasn't about one little base in San Diego. It was like, wait a minute, if there's an issue with the Marines, that's a problem. So therefore, you know, and of course, we could have fought it all. But at that point, it was, I think, a sign for me to say, this has taken over my life. And this is jacked up. Like, I loved these men. Like, I understood why there was problems in the military. And sometimes when you are the person who sees the problems, you're also a threat, because it's a very closed system. So I just realized that It was hard. I still look back at it as the hardest thing I went through. But, you know, the decision to write a book about it was a better route for me to go than to try to go back in and, you know, make a difference.
What's the name of that book?
The Inside Battle, Our Military Mental Health Crisis. And it's like over a decade old now. So I'm grateful it's obsolete because so much has changed since then. And the work that I was doing, I think, has been an impetus to what's happening now. But there's been such an incredible movement in the military mental health to make it. It's so much better now than it was. And there's lots of us that contributed to that. But I'm grateful that the book is obsolete. But at the time, it was like, hey, guys, everybody needs to wake up and see that we have to stop looking at therapy as reactive and let's start looking at it as proactive, because that's how we can. I remember Time did a thing on my book the day it came out, Time Magazine, and they said, they used the expression, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And yet we still in healthcare, you know, we still are focused on the reactive side and not proactive. So that was that. And then Psych Armor was a complete out of the blue. I was meeting with a philanthropist who really was kind of interested in looking at the veteran space and donating money in the veteran space. And at lunch, I said, you know, there's 30,000 at the time or 40,000, I don't remember, nonprofits supporting veterans. And I just came from this experience. And I said, you know, to me, I think the need is with civilians, right? We have 1% of our country serving, less than 1%, 10% are military connected. So, you know, you're married to someone or you're a child of someone, but that leaves 90% of us Americans post-draft that have no idea about military veteran culture at all. But if you think about it, when you leave the military and you go into civilian life, if you go back to school, where your teachers, if you get a job where your employers, if you use your employer healthcare, where your doctors and your nurses, if you use the nonprofits, where your volunteers. I mean, there were so many pieces to it. I'm like, why? Like, I had to work so hard, Michael, to learn about military culture when I was in the Marine Corps. There was no place where I could learn. So I literally would sit with them, tell me this. I was like so hungry for the information. I'm like, there should be a place where you could just go and learn so you could quickly get up to speed and make a difference in someone's life. And I said, so someone should build like an online learning platform for us civilians in these different areas. And so I was very lucky that this woman seated me. I had no interest in starting a nonprofit at all. In fact, I had just inked a business deal with Patrick Kennedy, my co-founder of PsychHub at the time. And we were going to go blow this out that we're doing now. And then this opportunity came to me and she's like, I want you to do it and I trust you. And I was like, oh gosh, I don't know anything about online learning or anything. And she believed in me. And so that was how we started Psych Armor. And the name Psych Armor came from the company name that I had been doing with the military. We had named it Psych Armor because I created like an kind of an LLC for it. And so then we turned it into a nonprofit. So that was the Psych Armor journey. And I'll stop.
What are some of the dynamics real quick, like about Psych Armor? Like, you know, what are some of the modalities that they can log on and do?
So Psych Armor is just a platform of, you know, hundreds of free training courses. And we have trainings for employers. Now we have them for caregivers. We have them for, I mean, there's so many different ones. There's ones that we train, you know, healthcare providers, mental health care providers. And one of the, and it's all free. And we have tons of corporations that sponsor the videos, which make them free. It's used within the VA and different parts of the military. We, you know, partner with hundreds of partners. So it really got big very, very quickly. One of the things I learned when I was at Psych Armor was that we got a contract to train community health providers. Those are like, you know, we call them single shingles. So we're out in the communities on how to treat PTSD. So if you remember back in time when the VA's Phoenix scandal happened and we lived this,
No, what was that?
It was like there was these fictitious wait lists. And they got busted because people were waiting on these wait lists for a lot longer than the VA was reporting. And so then Congress, like overnight, appropriated this kind of all this funding and this new rule that said if you had to wait more than 30 days or you lived more than 40 miles from a VA, you could go see someone out in the community. So then that created this new problem where these community providers had to get trained quickly. So we got funded to build out these trainings for providers. And the two evidence-based interventions for PTSD are cognitive processing therapy and prolonged exposure. And so we were like, well, well, we have no idea if you could train providers online to do, you know, either CPT or PE, but we did it and it was really effective. And that's when I realized, I was like, wow, the whole space of mental health, Michael, I mean, this is like where my passion is now, is so broken. So if you think about it, if you wanted to go, let's just say you're having a problem sleeping. A lot of people are having a hard time sleeping. The best treatment for insomnia is called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, but people don't know that. So all these symptoms we have, depression, anxiety, eating disorder, substance use, whatever it might be, complicated grief, there are these evidence-based interventions that are proven to be so much more effective at treating people's symptoms than what we're trained in school. Like me, we're generalists. So you're in private practice. Every hour, someone comes in with a different thing, and you're just treating everybody the same because that's just what we do. So I had said to Patrick, my business partner, I'm like, imagine if we could train these licensed behavioral health providers, give them skills to use evidence-based practice to really hone their craft, work at the top of their license, and specialize them into these different areas, certify them, and get them so that then when you are a consumer of mental health, you can get matched to somebody who's using the latest, greatest, we call it precision therapy. So that was what I, how I got from PsychArmor to PsychHub, which is where we're at now.
Yeah, that's originally your original plan, but this PsychArmor sounds like, when did you start that?
Shoot, I'm so bad at dates. I think that I was there for 4 years when I left, and I left 2 years ago. So probably 6 years ago.
So that's right in the beginning of like a lot of these now, when you want to learn something online, you know, there's this amazing library of like different channels. And
yes,
you kind of did that 6 years ago, which is kind of revolutionary because now there's more of them, a lot of them for different, all kinds of businesses. But 6 years ago, that was like, you were a pioneer to create such a library and then training trainers to be self-sustained. That's impressive. And doing it with the military, the Marines and everything, that's fascinating. I have like an adult ADHD. I've always had ADHD or what, I don't know if—
That explains it. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. You know, that's why I say like, you know, I'm very impulsive. I'll say things out of left field. Like, why do I say you look like a Charlie's Angel? You know, what does that got to do anything? It's because I think something and I'll just blurt it out. You know, there's no rhyme or reason to what I do sometimes. But I was put in a school, a special school called Fernald School at UCLA when I was a kid for 6 months, you know? And then I just want to get out of there because it was like, you know, for special needs kids. I guess I had enough to go back to Lanai Road School where we went to school together back in elementary school after those 6 months. But did you deal with a lot of adult ADHD in the military? And of course, what you do now, but do you deal with, you know, and how's that different than child ADHD?
You know what? It's so interesting because now I think we look at all of those things as adults, as they're like special secret weapons, right? Like we see how valuable they are. Like when we were kids, it was so punitive, right? Like you felt like you had to be in the special. I mean, I didn't know that about you. You feel like you're isolated, something's wrong with you. But I think now we've come so far, we have a long way to go to integrate mental health with physical health, but there are so many benefits to your ADHD. Like it serves you in probably so many ways that you didn't know that it was like a special power. You know, we say the same thing about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Like I'm super obsessive, like not as compulsive, but I ruminate about things all the time. If I knew then that that helps me be an entrepreneur and be a CEO because I'm constantly thinking about this could go wrong, like I couldn't imagine living life without it. So I think it's sometimes it's about managing and not learning how to manage. We're all special in our own ways. We all have our strengths. We all have our weaknesses. And so I would say like with ADHD, it's like learning how to manage it. There's some really great resources. I'll put in a little plug for PsychHub. We do a series called with Columbia University called Ask the Expert. And we just did a series on ADHD. And they, of course, brought in, oh God, I'm drawing a blank. He wrote the book Driven to Distraction, which was like the ADHD book. And they're going to be mad at me that I can't remember what his name is. And so like we ask him questions about like, how do you help a child with ADHD? What are the most effective things? How do you help a parent? And so there's just all these great resources now that I'm sure that your parents didn't have when you were growing up to not make you feel bad about it.
They didn't know what it was. They just said, oh, there's something wrong with him and had dyslexia and all the things. I had a stutter. My mom was, you know, I tried to talk like my mother. My mother was like Don Rickles, you know, with her attitude. And she's, you know, so I would stutter over my words and everything. So I don't know. It's just strange that, you know, the only time that personally I feel comfortable is with people that you know very well or stand-up comedy on stage, because you could say anything. You could say anything inappropriate. And the first thing you blurt out, improvisational-wise, is accepted. But it's amazing that I'm doing a podcast, because because you need to be on point or have hyper-focus at least, which comes in handy, like you say. It's a superpower.
It's Ned Hollowell. Sorry.
He's the one that wrote the book.
Yeah, he wrote the book. But my point is...
What's the name of that book again?
Driven to Distraction. He just came out with a new version of it. But that was like my dad being a psychiatrist. That was the Bible. But, you know, I think to anybody that's listening, or just to be a friend, Michael, to everybody you know, is that everybody has things that they work to overcome, but they're part of what make us special. Otherwise, we're just like everybody else. And I think we didn't know that then. We always felt like we were less than if we were. And I think a lot of youth have that now with social media. They just feel less than the images and the imagery of what they see from everybody else. But, you know, those are our special gifts, and those are the things that make us work harder and overcome things, and they differentiate us from everybody else.
Right. So let's go back to your journey. Let's go from, you're going from Psych Armor, okay? Did you leave to start Psych Hub? What happened at that point?
Yeah, I never wanted to really run the nonprofit. And I always thought, being a civilian who never served and wasn't married to someone that served and wasn't military connected at all, I always felt like I was visiting, you know? I mean, I had to work twice as hard as everybody else to overcome, to be able to be in the room. And I'm really grateful that I got in all the rooms, right? Especially as the end, I had to work so hard to earn the right, because it's a very inclusive group. It's like immediately people, you know, did you serve? Oh, are you married? Like, it's just, so I always felt like I was trying to do something and meaningful, but that I was going to leave. And when I say that, I truly will tell you that I went to work every day thinking to myself, leave your ego out of this, because a lot of founder CEOs come in with a lot of ego. And I used to say to myself, like, work your way out of your job. Your job is to work your way up, to run a nonprofit that can live on its own, and you can walk away and know that, you know, you did good by starting it. So I never saw it as something I was going to stay in forever. And like I said, Patrick and I had already, you know, inked a business before I did it. And I told him, give me 2 years. I stayed 4. But I was like, give me a couple of years to work on this.
Now, he's your partner, Patrick Kennedy.
Patrick Kennedy, yeah.
So, now he's a Kennedy. How did you meet that guy? that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Our kind of joke, inside joke and public joke, is that we actually don't even know how we met. Around the same time that I was out advocating for proactive counseling, he had just been in Congress for 16 years and was in kind of in and out of rehab and was really active in recovery and had been really advocating for this neck up from the checkup, where people can be more proactive. So we were just colleagues. We kept, you know, seeing each other. We do different news channel things together. I was doing a ton of public speaking. He was doing public. So I don't think either one of us know the moment that we met, but we've been like kindred spirits in this journey. And as this journey at Psych Hub has been, I mean, I'm so grateful to him for co-founding Psych Hub with me and just being on that journey. I mean, he's just brilliant and so passionate and definitely has the Kennedy, you know, the Kennedy charge of making a difference in the world. And he's great. He's a great business partner. He's exact same age as us, so it's kind of fun, but he's got little babies, all these adorable, adorable little kids. And yeah, he has the same passions as me. So we just really been knocking it out.
Awesome. So now Psych Hub is the same as Psych Armor, just for everybody, or what are the differences between the two?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we're in the greater mental health space. We have a little bit of a much more focused charge. So we're very focused right now on certifying behavioral health providers, like I was saying, on these evidence-based practice into specialties. So we're working on that. We're doing very well, actually, for such a new company. We're in half of the country's states, Medicaid states. We're doing things with commercial providers. We partnered with the payers, which we call like the health insurance companies, the United Healthcare's, Aetna's, Anthem's of the world. And really working with them. In fact, we just announced publicly, I think it was last week, our scientific advisory board, which is the chief medical officers of behavioral health of all of the national health insurance companies, are all on our board together to work on quality outcome measures, to all agree on the same outcomes. What we're trying to do is deliver better care more effectively and get providers paid more who are delivering that higher standard of care. And so it's a big burden responsibility and a great honor to be able to work with payers to kind of make this movement together. So we do our learning, not just, it's not like what you would think of about more of PsychArmor as like a one and done, where we're very focused on ongoing learning. Because actually, if you really want to change behavior, you have to keep, like, what happens is with online learning, e-learning, it's like knowledge learned. You take it, pre-test, post-test, and then maybe a week later, you forget everything you learned, right? How you change behavior to go from knowledge learned to behavior changes, you need ongoing learning that happens all the time. So we're very focused on a different style of teaching online, nudging smaller amounts of information over time. And then we give feedback to the patient as well, or the client, or the member. And so,
like, more interaction.
Yeah. So let's
In the personal growth world, they'll say there's three types of knowledge. There's physical knowledge and there's mental knowledge. Mental knowledge is you got the idea, but you haven't really applied it in your nervous system. So you don't have physical knowledge of that action yet to really get used to it.
I like that.
It's just a personal growth thing. It's a, you know, but I'm sure you'll have, that's kind of like getting the subject more interactive with just not passing a test and then you're done.
And then we have to engage the patient too. So going back to the example of insomnia, because I gave you insomnia, I diagnosed you with it. No. And so now let's say you're going to go see a therapist. You get a video like, this is what CBT for insomnia is going to be. And it's typically six stages. And, you know, and then before each session, you get a video sent to you. And then your provider can prescribe you all these different videos that are part of the treatment so you can practice at home. So it's like very engaging, that it's not like you coming in as just a patient saying, okay, fix me. It's like, okay, you work at it too. And it's like a two-way street. And we don't do any direct care. We don't do, I mean, there's all these amazing startups and folks that are in BH right now, behavioral health. We're just on the training piece. So we're just helping train the providers, giving them the skills and the reskills to kind of really be able to hone their craft. And then we also do a lot with what we call allies. So we have a mental health ally certification. And that is just for everybody to learn how to support someone who might be going through a hard time. And so we call it a layperson. A layperson, just like anybody who might be interested. And it's 8 modules. It's doing phenomenally well. It is definitely making its way in some of the largest corporations in this country. We teach you about mental health competency, about suicide prevention, safety planning. So what do you say to someone who might be suicidal? That's the biggest thing. People don't know what to say. So we actually walk you through all of that. We've partnered with, you know, like we bring in all these experts, and it's very engaging. There's role plays and animations and games and lived experience. There's a module on diversity and mental health. There's one on unconscious bias. It's like, you have to be careful when you're talking to people, the bias that you bring to it. We have substance use and opiates. We have motivational interviewing, which is awesome. It like just teaches you how to have a hard conversation.
And all this is done online. This is all like
all online,
channels.
Yeah, it's all online, and it's like super inexpensive. And like I said, companies are picking it up, and we're training, you know, whole workforce of companies on it. And people always say, who is it good for? Because we have so many different kinds of people taking it. Like, you would be surprised at all different. And we always say, whoever's hungry for the knowledge.
Yeah, I'm sure there's like another, you're constantly adding to it, you know, modality, another branch.
We're adding a version of it right now for crisis intervention. Like, what do you do for someone who's in crisis? Like, what do you like? So we're adding one more module, and it's also customizable. So we're customizing it for large corporations where we're bringing in, or different audience where we change some of the role plays with that audience. So it's been great. So we do that. And then we have our free video library. So we are so honored to be YouTube's partner for mental health. We were very excited a couple weeks ago. They came out with a press release, and they named us alongside Harvard, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, the Academy. Wow. of medicine and Psych Hub. So we're very, very honored to be their partner in mental health. We have really working very hard right now on our YouTube channel. So we encourage everybody to go and subscribe and learn more. They are a phenomenal company to work with. We love them. We just really, really enjoy working with YouTube, and they're innovative, and as is Google, the parent company. But so we have all this free content out there, which is our passion, is to really have a good place for mental health literacy, for people to come learn. All of our videos are about 3 minutes. They go through the most extensive QA process to before they go live, so people have a good place to learn about these issues. So that's what we're up to.
What's your day-to-day like, the nuts and bolts of your day-to-day? What a lot of, you know, CEOs, or, you know, they get to a point where, you know, entrepreneurs, at least, they'll be in the marketing their business. But I know it's an amalgam thing. Are you talking to a lot of programmers? What are the nuts and bolts of your day-to-day?
Oh, God. Right now we're hiring. So right now I need help more than anything. There is like no way for me to explain my day to day. And
HR then? Is it a little bit of everything? Or how do you time it out? Or like what goes on? Now, what time do you wake up?
So I'm pretty routine about that part of it, right? So I do wake up at like 6:30, but I go to bed late, and I work out every morning. So I have this really weird.
We sound the same. I wake up at 6:20. I work out two small workouts a day. I work out in the morning, and then I go to work.
Oh, interesting.
And then I work out after work.
See, I think it's easier for a guy to do that. We have to like get all ready. I have a super weird life, and I just shared this at a different podcast, and someone sent me like a spam message through LinkedIn and was like, I so resonated with what you said, so I'm going to say it again. This is how embarrassing my life is. I wake up in the morning and I put on workout clothes. I walk through my kitchen and I go to my Peloton, and I live in a building, so I either do Peloton in the morning or I go downstairs to the gym in my building and I try to shake it up, and I'll do like the treadmill or the elliptical or something like that. So every day I do like at least 30 minutes of cardio. Then I go and I shower and I get completely ready for no good reason. I like, when I tell you, like, I'll go out, curl my hair, I put on makeup, I put on socks, shoes, I'm wearing a belt today. Like, I don't see anybody.
Even if you're quarantining, because it's still COVID.
I don't see anybody. Most days, I don't see a soul. Then I walk.
Do you do that because psychologically that actually permeates?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I even put on perfume. I'm like, who? What am I doing? It's so weird. I think I'm weird. But then I'm on Zoom calls all day long.
Right.
And the worst part, a lot of it is I do it for me because I have to stare at myself now all day. Back when we had an office, I would like go to the restroom and I would look at myself for 5 seconds and move on. Now I stare at myself all day and I'm my worst critic. So I think I do it more for me so that I'm not as hard on myself, even though I am still really hard on myself. But yeah, so a big part of my mom, back to back to literally all day long. And then towards the end of the day, maybe 5 or 6, I'll put on clothes. When the weather was nicer, I would take my one-on-ones with my direct reports for a walk. So that's kind of like your second. But now it's so cold that I'll like then put on like sweats or yoga pants. And then I get on the computer and I start doing all my emailing for the day because I don't have time to do anything during the day. And then at night, I'm doing all of the emailing, and all of those meetings all have action items and do outs and things like that. But for the most part, I'm not doing very much internal. Our COO is phenomenal. Our internal team is incredible, and they really do all of that. I'm more external and working with our clients. And we're just, to be honest with you, we're just managing all the inbound leads that we have coming in. It's just crazy.
Right.
So it's a good problem to have though.
Yeah. So it's an interesting time, you know, with the way the dynamic, you know, you're lucky. When I go to work, we're able to separate in separate offices, but we'll have meetings, you know, 7 feet apart, and we're all wearing masks. So you're looking at people, everybody's wearing masks. You look like surgeons, you know, but it's a regular business. So what's your next 3 to 5 goal with what you're doing right now, or what's your plans for the future?
Our plan, I guess, is to really move more people through the funnel of getting them certified. So we want to launch our registry so that people can get matched, right? So when you watch a YouTube video on insomnia, you could click to find a provider certified in treating insomnia, you know, put in your zip code and your insurance and click here. So in order to get there, we have to have critical mass of providers. That's our journey right now. And making it as enjoyable and worthwhile experience for them. And so that's what we're very, very focused on right now. And then we just have the small goal of training the entire country, really the whole world, to be allies, and that everybody, we have an access issue. There's not enough providers to go around, and that everybody can help, because not everybody needs a licensed provider, you know, mental health provider. A lot of times it could be you. It could be you talking to a friend. It could be a podcast that you're running. It's just, you never know what resonates with someone and what they need at that time. And you know, and you might not need, like, a talking to a friend helps now, and maybe in a year you need a therapist. So we're very focused on just kind of educating people about how they could support others and help themselves, and then launching our registry, and then maybe then I'll get a good night's sleep.
So the what's the main URL? Is it psychhub.com?
Yep, psychhub.com.
And all the channels, everything there that we're talking about, this whole kind of like psychology world, so to speak, or how would you describe the one sentence of what you would call this? Because it's like a big giant community of, like, it's just not people getting trained to train other people. It's also a community to get help.
That's right. So yeah.
What's this world called?
Yeah. We don't do direct care, but we do, you know, we call it an online learning platform in mental health. We say that we're the world's largest, the most comprehensive online learning platform on mental health topics. And so I was going to say in the world, but I said the world's the largest. So that's, you know, that's what we consider ourselves. It's just a learning platform on all mental health topics, substance use, suicide prevention, all of that. And that's our lane. So everything kind of mental health focused, we have tons of free content. So we run two podcasts, our Ask the Expert. We also have The Future of Mental Health, which Patrick and I co-host. And for people who are interested in a deeper level, like whether it's policy, whether it's advocacy, whether it's, we brought in really interesting people like Lady Gaga's mother, who's running the Born This Way Foundation, to, you know, the CEO of the APA, American Psychological Association, to, we've just had a variety of different people talking about because let's face it, mental health is ripe for disrupting. I mean, it is so broken, and COVID showed the world that, you know, it's this broken place, and it affects everybody. We all can relate to it now. So
it also seems like you're like doing like, it's like Bruce Lee, you know, it's constantly changing your technique. It's not static. You're constantly improving it. You're adding to it. Something might change, you know, that you might be saying doing something today, but might be different tomorrow, depending on what you guys discover.
Yeah. And that was like your point about the technology too, you know, and that's why it's so important. Like, we're so impact focused. Both Patrick and I have so similar in that is that there's not a chance PsychHub is solving any of this alone. We have over 600 partners. If you go to our website, just look at them. And there's so many of them are household names that, you know, we all recognize. And it's because we know the only way to change this is together. It literally is the only way to do this is, you know, is by all kind of holding hands and doing it together. Our COVID-19 Mental Health Resource Hub is literally the largest nonprofits in the space. Mental Health America, NAMI, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Crisis Text Line. Like, we've all joined forces, all the health insurance companies, the associations, because we know the need is so great. If we all hold hands and do it together, that's how we move mountains. And I think there's just a lot of really, really good, like-minded people who bust their ass every day for the better of everybody else. And it's not about who's making a buck today. It just doesn't feel like that for us. Like, we feel like we're on a mission. It's way bigger than us. And something put us here, and we just got to keep charging at it to deliver.
Yeah. I'll close with this and just say, I think this is the most noble quest, because why people do what they do. If you look at every news segment, you look at everything that's going on in the world today, it's like, well, why did they do that? Or let's examine. But really, people aren't asking why people do what they do. And that's exactly what your whole, that's why it attracted me, personal growth, but it attracts me to do what you're doing, is because that you're examining that whole world. You're creating a whole environment for people to go to find out the mechanics of their mind. And I just think it's great work, and I'm excited to see this, you know, grow. And I think it's just beautiful. And I think you're beautiful. And I think it's great that what you've done. And just congratulations to you on something that's truly amazing.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. I'm also so proud of you and that you're sharing stories and that you're letting people know. And, you know, I think the more that we can talk about all things, the more we're just comfortable talking about. I always tell people the best thing about getting older is you get more comfortable in your skin. You know, when you're young, you think you know everything. As you get older, you realize just how much you don't know. And that people always say to me, what's your greatest strength? My line is always been surrounding myself around people smarter than me, you know, and it's just it. And I think it's like you're doing a lot of that by helping people see that we all have our strengths, we all have our weaknesses, and that we're just as good as we can be and that we're all better together. So I appreciate you inviting me and letting me talk about my favorite subjects. And don't be a stranger, because it's been what, how many years since we've talked? So
probably since high school. Long time.
So let's not let this much time go by, because we'll be like, you know, really old if we wait that long again.
Well, yeah, we'll have to have you back on, you know, and continue to see the progress, because I just know this is going to grow. It, you know, it's been growing and it's amazing. So everybody go check out psychhub.com. And thank you so much, Marjorie Morrison.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That was Marjorie Morrison. Very important work she's doing there. One of my favorite subjects, the human mind, why people do what they do, the study of human emotions. Since the time my two daughters were able to understand, I would give them daddy's 10 lessons to live by. And the first two were take care of your body and your mind. I wish everybody the best out there. Look forward to joining you in the next episode. All right. If you want to find out more about our show, go to longshotleaders.com. If you want to be a part of something special and get your daily dose of inspiration, perspiration, exasperation, knowledge, and creativity, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our podcast. And if you like what we do, share our show with your family and your friends, and put some positivity out there in the world. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again on the next episode, I bid you adieu. Where did I get French from?